You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Tuesday to you. Appreciate you being with us. Hey, if you're a DirecTV subscriber, you better start looking for alternative ways to watch this Arkansas game on Saturday. If Monday Night Football can't get DirecTV and Disney to the table together to get this resolution, I'm not sure that Arkansas UAB is going to do it. As it appears right now, if you're a DirecTV subscriber, DirecTV stream, AT&T UVerse, you're probably not going to be able to watch the Arkansas game against UAB on Saturday. It's a 3:15 kickoff on SEC Network. That's one of the many Disney-affiliated networks that have been dark on DirecTV since Labor Day. We talked about this dispute a little bit last week, Tom, and it seems like Disney and DirecTV are – Tom Murphy's with us from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, by the way, for those who can't see. We talked about – like, they are far apart on a resolution to this. And this is a big deal for people because there are still over 11 million subscribers out there, you know, with DirecTV. Rural areas, it's a very popular, you know, in some ways it's pretty much the only way you can watch these types of games. And right now, you know, if you're in Arkansas and Alabama and you're wanting to watch this game on Saturday, I don't think you're going to be able to see it.
Well, I was aware of the dispute when it first came out, but I'm not a DirecTV customer, and so I didn't realize it had grown or, you know, like it is where it is. So that's disturbing.
Well, we've talked about this. DirecTV, they are willing to go to the mat. Last year they had a dispute with Nexstar, and it took over 3 months for that to get settled. And really it took the NFL season starting for DirecTV and Nexstar to get the adults in the room and get this thing hammered out. I'm interested to see how, you know, the NFL season is going to affect this. Maybe they only miss one Monday Night Football game. But, you know, the DirecTV subscribers are mad. You've got to know that Disney and ESPN's advertisers are mad. I mean, think about if you are advertising on Monday Night Football, they've got a presenting sponsor, they've got a pregame sponsor, they've got a halftime sponsor. You're missing the eyeballs that you thought you were paying for. And so, you know, they're not happy either. And so for anybody, I think, who thinks that Disney is just kind of sitting back and says, we don't have to do anything, I think that maybe that's a little bit misguided. I did find it interesting, though, that during Monday Night Football last night, did you see who one of the advertisers was announced as?
I did not.
DirecTV. So anyway, just want to kind of get that out there that this doesn't look like it's going to get settled, you know, anytime soon, based on the reports. The things I read last night said that the two sides are still very far apart on that. So Arkansas and UAB Saturday on SEC Network at 3:15. We're going to talk a little bit later with Alex Mortensen, the UAB offensive coordinator. Alex obviously used to play quarterback here at Arkansas. We'll talk to him about coming back to Fayetteville, talk to him a little bit about his offense. We brought Tom in, though, to talk about Arkansas and Oklahoma State as we kind of move on past that game, but still analyze maybe what happened. Sam Pittman had his press conference yesterday to kind of look forward to UAB, but also look back at Oklahoma State. He was asked about a lot of the things that went wrong. He was asked about the clock management. He was asked about the kicking situation, you know, asked about the turnovers. And some of these that you didn't even have to be asked about. He just addressed them freely. You know, he said, we got to handle the ball better if we're going to have a chance to win. What were your takeaways listening to him yesterday?
Well, I had several, and one of them being that they have to play more people because I think the heat – so when we looked at the forecast, it was like 72 at kickoff, and it got up into the low 80s. You're thinking, okay, that's a beautiful day. That turf – I went down there. That turf was burning up. It was really hot. So you got Jaquin and Jackson cramping up, and I think some defensive players got tired as well. I think Taylen Green got tired. You could just see it in his body language here and there. So – That's a big thing. They utterly dominated Oklahoma State. They came out with concepts on both sides of the ball that threw them for a loop. And to Oklahoma State's credit, I think they're one of the few teams in the country that were veteran enough and assured of themselves enough to say, you know, took all these blows, were giving up huge plays after huge plays, couldn't get the ball going on offense, saw their star tailback, Ollie Gordon, was being stymied, and managed to come back. Arkansas played a huge role in them coming back, but the fact they kept their heads in the game, they got to things they could do well in the second half, they made adjustments, speaks to the veteran nature of their team. And that's when you were concerned that, A, they had such a veteran team, their offensive line averaged 24 years old, and they had such a great record at home and in close games, it just funneled right into how it played out at the end.
And they've got a lot of experience coming back in close games, you know, not a whole lot different than what happened against Arkansas. They had a game against BYU last year where they were down 18 in the third quarter. They came back and won. I looked this up yesterday, and Oklahoma State, we talk about Arkansas in close games, Oklahoma State has won five consecutive games now that have been decided by 8 points or less, you know, so a one-possession game. They won at OU last year, mentioned the BYU game. They won against Texas A&M at the Texas Bowl, obviously beat Arkansas, a game that doesn't even factor into one-possession game. They were down in the fourth quarter at West Virginia last year, and they came back in that game. They outscored West Virginia 28-10 in the fourth quarter and won that game. So this is a program that knows how to close games. And we talked about this yesterday, Tom. There's a difference between the program and the team. So like Arkansas's team last year and team this year are part of the same program, but they are different teams. There's 55 new players on this team. And so, yes, you've got to look at, you know, the big picture that Arkansas as a program struggles to finish close games. But then you look at Oklahoma State on the flip side, and Phil Steele made this point on our podcast last month. He said that they are the most experienced team in college football playing together. And so this team for Arkansas, this 2024 team, they have to finish games. They have to learn how to finish games together. This Oklahoma State team, by and large, they already knew how to finish games together, and I thought that played a big role in the game.
I had a friend tell me that there's this cowboy culture, and after seeing all that in action, there's a cowboy culture. They knew they were still in the game, and they stuck with it, and they managed, with Arkansas's help, to come back and win. And this is another thing Sam Pittman said yesterday, that in the coaches' meetings, Bobby Petrino said, they know their team. We're still learning ours. And so Arkansas came that close to, without the turnovers, this thing was bordering on a blowout. Mm-hmm. They came that close to just blowing out a top 25 team. So that's, if they can manage to correct those mistakes, they could be very good this year.
Yeah, Sam also validated something I said yesterday, and I felt better about it, was that I thought scheduling UAPB the week before Oklahoma State was a disservice to the team because they didn't get challenged. They had nothing about UAPB taught Arkansas how to play four quarters and then some against a really quality opponent from Oklahoma State. I feel like if you're going to play an FCS team, you either need to play a really good FCS team if you're going to play them week one, or you need to move them down further in the schedule like they've done some other years where you play them, you know, maybe in October as kind of a de facto bye week. Or I liked what they did against UAPB 3 years ago where they played them before a bye week and they basically got like 2 weeks off.
Yeah, and the point you're making, Sam Pittman said, we wish we'd had one other game to get mm-hmm. ready for Oklahoma State. And had they played sharp against a UAB-type team last week and then played Oklahoma State, maybe they'd have been in a better position.
I think losses can leave people, you know, kind of thinking two different ways. I think it can leave them either pessimistic about what's to come. I think it can leave them optimistic about what's to come. You know, last year when Arkansas lost to BYU, there was a lot of pessimism. I think a lot of people felt like when Arkansas lost that first game, they could feel that there were going to be a lot more losses to come. And that was justified. BYU started a 6-game losing streak for Arkansas. I don't feel that pessimism about this year's football team. I think people are upset about the way Saturday ended. They're upset that they blew the game. They felt like they had Oklahoma State beat. But I think that there are a lot of people out there in Razorback land who feel like if you take away some of the mistakes, if you take away, you know, the untimely penalties, you take away the turnovers, they think Arkansas is going to be a competitive football team. And you look at, you know, the next few weeks, they play UAB. They're favored to win by 21 points. They play Auburn next week. Auburn just lost to Cal. That's a game you ought to be able to go to Auburn and at least be competitive and have a chance to win. Nothing I've seen from Texas A&M makes me think that that's a far superior team to Arkansas. So there's a stretch of games coming up here where they've got a chance to win some games and build some confidence going into that harder part of their schedule.
They do, but as we know, it's all week to week. I mean, Auburn lost to New Mexico State and then came in here and whipped Arkansas.
Well, it's the other way around. They whipped Arkansas and then they lost to New Mexico State by three touchdowns.
Well, yeah, they geared up for this game and they won it. Arkansas clearly had schemed up and had great game plans for Oklahoma State. That's in that first three window. Have they planned that for Auburn? They've got to cut down on Auburn's run pass option offense. that Peyton Thorne killed him with last year, where they crushed him on the edge. So they've got to be schemed up for that. But if they don't start winning the turnover battle, if they don't start getting pressure on quarterbacks, it's going to be hard to do. But I feel like they have that in them.
Pavia, the quarterback in New Mexico State, he's at Vanderbilt now. He's still undefeated in an SEC stadium. How about Vanderbilt, the way they've started this year? You know it's bad, this whole SEC-FCS thing, when Vanderbilt's beating FCS teams 55-0. They got to get those games off the schedule. I like Arkansas's offensive potential, Tom, but they got to put the ball in the end zone more. They've got to learn how to finish these drives. You graded them differently than I did. I read your grades earlier in the week. You gave them a B or a B-, I think. I gave them a C because they got a lot of yards. They went up and down the field. And, you know, but to me, yards are a dime a dozen. It's about finishing drives, and they just didn't finish enough. You get 31 points and you have 648 yards. There's something wrong with that performance.
Needed to stick it in the end zone more. There were a few mistakes. There was a sack on the first possession. There was a sack in the overtime possession that Taylen Green just can't take those. As much as we like Taylen Green's potential, and he's a great kid, he owned the mistakes the other night, he can't take those sacks. So that plays into it. And then I had a buddy tell me, Oklahoma State gives up yardage into the red zone, and then they find a way, and they did that. And then Arkansas missed the field goals when you're supposed to make the field goal. So it all kind of played into still don't know your team great. You're missing Cam Little for sure. And if they can get those corrected, I think they'll have a chance to win these games against Auburn and A&M and have a chance to have some momentum going for the Tennessee game here.
I was thinking about the two-kicker situation. You know, 2 years ago, Arkansas had two NFL starting kickers on its roster, Cam Little and Jake Bates. Now they've got a totally different two-kicker scenario in that they can't figure out who to play, Kyle Ramsey or Matt Shipley.
And they both had very good careers at Hawaii and Abilene Christian. Mm-hmm. But kicking at Abilene Christian is a little different than kicking in front of 55,000 fans on a super hot day under pressure. And, you know, essentially all his kicks were under pressure.
I was surprised that Shipley was not their starting kicker, just based on what we saw in preseason scrimmages or what we were told about the scrimmages. Now, I know Ramsey had the groin injury for one of them, but you've got one kicker that makes 75% of his field goals. You've got one that makes 33% of his field goals. I was really surprised when the one who made the lower percentage went out there as their starter for game one.
Same here. I mean, there had to be something that we didn't see, that we didn't know about on the day-to-day grades, the day-to-day kicking they did that led to that. But it's back open, and maybe Shipley will get a chance to get in there.
Going back to offense, I like Arkansas's offense. I think they've got a lot of potential. I like Taylen Green's ability to move around and escape pressure. I mean, Oklahoma State hurried him 9 times the other day, but only ended up with 3 sacks out of those 9 hurries. And so he did a good job of eluding pressure, getting to the outside, making some plays. Mike Gundy was on his coach's show last night at the Senior Citizen Home in Stillwater. You know, that's where he's doing his coach's show this year, which I think is hilarious, but also very on brand for Gundy. And he said that Petrino caught him off guard. He said that when they went back in their film study and they watched Petrino's teams, they didn't go back to watch Lamar Jackson at Louisville. And he said that's basically how they used Taylen Green in this game on Saturday. Arkansas didn't have to show anything against UAPB. They got to go out there and have vanilla ice cream for 4 quarters and beat UAPB. And so there really was nothing on film for Oklahoma State to study relative to what Arkansas actually came out and did. Oklahoma State, to their credit, their coaches did a great job, I would guess, at halftime of adjusting to what Arkansas had done in the first half, because that looked like 2 totally different games from Arkansas's offense.
I think they really did. But still, Petrino was scheming. I mean, both sides of the ball, I thought the schemes were just really brilliant. When you hold Ollie Gordon down the way they did, when they kind of forced some missed throws in the quick pass game from Alan Bowman, you're supposed to really take advantage of that game and win it. Even late in the game, the overtime, the double overtime, I was not in good position to see this live. But if Taylen throws that pass a little higher to Rodney Hill over in the right flats, it's a walk-in touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then you're going for a 2-point conversion to tie the game. There was a lot of concept. I watched the thing DJ Williams did, former player, played under Petrino, who broke down some of the concepts and misses and missed assignments that happened in that game. Arkansas could have had 750 yards of offense in that game. And that's how much they were dominating.
Green, it feels like some of the questions about his consistency that followed him here from Boise maybe showed, you know, reared their head in this game against, you mentioned that pass. There were a lot of passes. I would say probably four or five passes well down the field that were not necessarily on target, but Arkansas's receivers made some outstanding catches over there. And so the consistency, I think, is still something that you got to watch from him.
No question about it. But I will give him this. I thought he got tired. I thought he didn't avoid the rush a little bit in the second half as well as he did in the first. But in the second overtime, they were on their own 40, third and 10, and he found Andrew Armstrong. He got out of pressure, stepped up in the pocket, hit Andrew Armstrong just where he needed to. If you don't have that play, you might not have a chance to excuse me, that was the end of regulation that they did that for the field goal. But great play, and there's going to be ups and downs but with Taylen Green, but I think a lot more ups than downs.
You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. We think it's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all the Razorback teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. There were some clock management issues late in the game that I wanted to discuss. There was a play where they get a first down, and then they take a long time to get lined up, and I think they wasted probably about 12 seconds just to spike the football.
Yeah.
Obviously, after they get the long pass to Armstrong that puts them in field goal range, they ran another play, and had Andrew Armstrong not dropped that pass, the game probably ends with him getting tackled in bounds because Arkansas has no timeouts. It was a very – I don't know if he meant to drop it or if he just dropped it, but it was the best thing that could have happened for them at that time because they don't get that game – I don't think they get that game-tying field goal if he doesn't drop that. There was one other one that I've heard people complain about. It's when Arkansas took its first timeout, and it was after the long pass, the finger pistols from Bowman. You know, they stopped the clock to throw the penalty flag, but it's my understanding – that the clock would have restarted with a 25-second play clock. And so I think maybe some of that criticism of Pittman is misguided there on when he took that first timeout. I think there are people who think that he unnecessarily took a timeout when the clock was stopped, but I think the clock was going to restart there. But by and large, there were a lot of clock management issues late, not only in the first half, but I think there might have even been one late in the first half.
Yeah, I was down on the field for the overtime stuff, so things get a little bit muddled, and I went back and tried to put it together, and you're right. I think they had a third and one, and Rodney Hill ran for maybe 6 yards mm-hmm. out to the 40, and they did blow maybe a dozen seconds right mm-hmm. there and wound up spiking it. So that was a communication, like getting guys lined up properly, and maybe not having the call like spike, mm-hmm. right to the start, because that would have been the best option after mm-hmm. that first down spike. So that cost him some time. And I mean, look, it's a new system with Petrino on the helmet comms and a lot of new guys on offense, and that may have been a byproduct of that. So they've got to clean that up, no question, when it's real crunch time. And then they also lost time on the play before the last pass, before the field goal at the end of regulation. Andrew Armstrong would have had to catch that pass and basically pivot and dive out of bounds in 2 seconds.
I don't think he could have.
To have got the clock stopped.
There was a defender right there next to him, and he was a good ways inside, you know, closer to the hash marks. He wasn't by the hash, but he wasn't by the sideline either. On that play where they took 12 seconds to spike it, you know, the alternative there is you take the they weren't aligned correctly, and so the alternative there is you take the snap and you spike it, but then at that point there's a 10-second runoff because they don't have any timeouts left and the clock is running. So kind of a, you know, just an unfortunate situation there. Real quick, Tom. Tom is our AP voter in the state of Arkansas. I want to talk to you about your top 25 ballot here. Won't mention everybody. You can see the full list at wholehogsports.com. We'll mention your top 10, though. Georgia, number 1. Ohio State, number 2. Texas at 3. Alabama at 4. Ole Miss at 5. You've got Miami higher than some people do at number 6. Missouri at 7. Oregon at 8. Penn State at 9. And Tennessee at 10. Just kind of tell me about what you've seen from other teams that have informed how you're voting.
Well, the Miami vote, they were very, very impressive in that opener against Florida. I mean, just That was amazing what they did in Gainesville, and I thought Florida was going to be a better team.
Are you more impressed with Miami or unimpressed with Florida?
It's a little bit of both, but I didn't see a whole lot of, well, any of Miami last week. They crushed somebody. And you were asking me pre-show about Tennessee. And so right above them on my ballot, Oregon and Penn State, who have not been impressive. I mean, Penn State was, I think, trailing for a bit of the game against, was it Bowling Green last week.
Oregon could be 0-2 right now very easily.
Very easily. So, you know, I'm going to give that some time. But that's a lot of SEC teams in the top 10 right there. And Tennessee has been super impressive. I did listen to a good bit and watch some of the North Carolina State game. And Iamaliava is a fantastic kid. I mean, like, they're legit big-time offense. So there's a chance for Tennessee to move up and probably be in the top 10. They have a conference game before they come to Arkansas.
They go to OU. Two of them. Yeah, they go to OU. Josh Heupel's return to Norman.
Yeah, and Oklahoma not super impressive against Houston after what UNLV did to Houston. So there's a lot of shuffling to do, and we'll see where Tennessee and the Vols are land on my ballot when they come here.
We talked to Barry Trammell from the Tulsa World yesterday, and we asked him about the Sooners because he saw that game Saturday night, and he said he doesn't know that that's a very good football team right now. And I think there's some concern over there about not only their SEC schedule, but about Tulane this weekend, because Tulane gave K-State all that it had wanted in the game last weekend.
In New Orleans.
One more, you got Oklahoma State at 14. Was that up or down, and what did Saturday do to – influence you at all about the Cowboys?
Well, it was up a little. So I had them, I want to say, like 11th in the preseason poll. I kind of really believed in all that veteran talent we just talked about. And then the way they played South Dakota State in the opener, I was like, And so there was a lot of other teams that were ahead of them, and I think I had them around 17. So maybe I moved them up three spots. Because when you looked at it, a lot of teams lost that were around the teens in this poll. I mean, Notre Dame is still ahead of them in my poll, but a lot of teams lost game. Michigan lost, and so they still have a chance, obviously. I think Utah and Oklahoma State, probably the top two teams in the Big 12, but I think 14 is about right for them.
Would you have ranked Arkansas if they won?
I think I would have. I mean, it's like you can't go back and see, well, what else might have happened. But a 2-0 Arkansas team that just won on the road at 16, and the way they did with those 648 yards, I believe I would have, because you look at the bottom of my poll, I mean, would I have thought they were better than Memphis had they won this game? Yes, and they're 24. Uh-huh. Northern Illinois, that was a huge win for them at Notre Dame. Would I have put them ahead of Clemson at 22 on my ballot? Probably. So they probably would have been 22, somewhere in there.
Interesting. You can read Tom's full ballot at wholehogsports.com. You can read all his work in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and at wholehogsports.com. We appreciate you being here, Tom. When we come back, Anthony Christensen is going to join me on desk. We're going to talk about the Razorbacks basketball schedule that, for all intents and purposes, is finalized now. We're also going to get his thoughts on this unbeaten Arkansas soccer team that's ranked number 6 nationally. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
You can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It gives you full access to our website, wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. Hogs Illustrated, our magazine 20 plus issues per year. And one of those issues coming up is going to be our basketball preview coming up just a little bit later in the fall. Anthony Christensen's with me now. Anthony's our basketball reporter. And Anthony, you've been working on this quite a bit. You've been talking to coaches, analysts, former coaches of current players. Just what's the feeling like right now as they gear up toward the start of team practice, which is coming up here very soon?
Yeah, no, people are excited about this team. I mean, like you look at it just on paper, there's a lot of talent, a lot of continuity there as well, obviously with a lot of guys following John Calipari from Kentucky. So, I mean, people are excited to see how this plays out. A lot of people are saying, you know, it's a good move for everybody involved, just for John Calipari to kind of get that new start, fresh start after, you know, 15 years at Kentucky. You know, a lot of people thought he'd gotten stale. So, I mean, there's a lot of excitement just because of, you know, that, the continuity, the, you know, the talent on the roster, the guys they brought in through the portal, even just through the non-Kentucky avenues through, you know, obviously John L. Davis, Jonas Adu. I mean, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of talent on the team, and, you know, the outside perspective and the inside perspective is both people are, you know, excited about it.
Basketball season always, it creeps up and it's like, whoa, it's there. Didn't see that coming. I mean, it's September the 10th. First basketball games in less than 2 months. And they've got exhibition games and they've got, you know, I don't know if they'll do a red-white game this year like they've done in the past. But it's coming up really fast. I mean, I believe I've got this right. I think they start preseason team practice 6 weeks before the first game. And we think the first game is going to be November 6th. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But, I mean, that means we're probably 2 weeks away from the start of team practice, if that.
Yeah, we're getting there. I'm excited. I mean, I'm a basketball guy, so I'm always going to be excited. I mean, I've been counting down the days for a while just to – you know, get back to, you know, what I feel I do best is write about basketball. So I'm looking forward to it. Like you said, it kind of creeps up on you, but I've been trying to work ahead on a lot of stuff. it's exciting.
We know the Arkansas basketball non-conference schedule now, or at least we think we do. We think we have pieced this thing together either through games that have been reported, announced by Arkansas or announced by the other school. Just yesterday, Texas San Antonio announced that it's going to come to Bud Walton Arena on December the 7th. We think that gives us 13 non-conference games now, which is the maximum number that a team can play. You looked up some stuff on UTSA after this came out. They had a losing record last year. New coach, pretty much an entirely new team. What'd you learn?
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Austin Klontz coming in kind of as the new head man at UTSA, an assistant at Alabama last year, so he's kind of in that Nate Oates kind of tree, if you will. So I'm expecting this team to play fast, rely a lot on the three-pointer and a lot on guard play as well. And you kind of can see that through the guys they brought in through the transfer portal. I mean, you look at a guy like Primo Spears coming from Florida State. He's, you know, he's really good. It'll be a lot of fun to see, you know, him in action. Raekwon Horton coming from a really good James Madison team from last year that obviously was – you know, a tournament team. I felt like they should have been a tournament team regardless of if they won their conference tournament or not, and beat Wisconsin in the first round. So obviously there's a lot of talent coming just through those two guys as well. And you got Jaquan Scott, coming over from Mississippi State. Zach Gonsolin coming from TCU. A guy I think is really underrated is Teron Joseph from Southern. Because when Southern, you obviously went to, I believe it was Mississippi State, one of those Mississippi schools, I can't remember off the top of my head, went in there and pulled the upset. I mean, he was a big part of that. And then you got a guy like Sky Wicks coming from Incarnate Word, another guy you probably haven't heard a ton about just because he's playing at a smaller school, you know, making that jump up to, you know, the American Conference. He's a really good shooter, guy who is a lot of fun to watch just because I'm a weirdo and I'll watch any college basketball game I can find.
And we call that a sicko.
Yeah. and Sky Wicks, he's a lot of fun to watch. But, you know, this team, you know, it's you can kind of see it's, I don't want to say mini Alabama, but you can see kind of the fingerprints on it, if you will, just from, you know, Coach Klontz being on Nate Oates' staff.
We think Arkansas is going to start the season against Lipscomb. That's on November 6th. That game has been announced by Lipscomb. The season, the earliest the season can begin is November 4th. So you're going to see a lot of teams playing on November 4th. That's a Monday. No games can be played on the 5th because that's the day of the election. And so it looks like Arkansas is going to play its first game on the 6th. And what's interesting to me, Anthony, is that that's only 3 days before Arkansas plays Baylor in Dallas. You know, we were talking about football, how the football team didn't give itself, you know, much of a preparation for playing Oklahoma State. Kind of a similar situation potentially here in basketball, you know, whereas Baylor, I haven't seen their schedule, but it wouldn't surprise me if Baylor plays twice before they play Arkansas. The Razorbacks only play one time before they play Baylor down at American Airlines Center.
Yeah, and I also haven't seen Baylor scheduled leading up to that game, so I can't really comment on that. I will say, though, Lipscomb is always a really well-coached team.
They give Arkansas trouble in North Little Rock.
Yeah, no, I mean, Coach Acuff does a really good job there. I mean, it's been a program that's kind of steadily risen since he took over, since Casey Alexander left that program to go over to Belmont just across the street there in Nashville. But, I mean, Lipscomb's always a well-coached team. They play hard. They're a good team, fun team to watch. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, they're scheduling, you know, looking at their schedule. It's not Pacific.
It's not UAPB.
It's not Pacific or UAPB in football terms to start the season. So, I mean, they're given, you know, it's a game they should win on paper, mm-hmm. obviously. But, I mean, it's tougher than a lot of teams will, you know, open their season with, mm-hmm. Which I think it's good to have, you know, a tougher start to the season, just to, I guess, kind of throw your guys in there, just kind of see what they're made of right away. And obviously, I mean, you have the two exhibitions, TCU and Kansas, before that as well, to kind of prepare them for that. But yeah, it'll be exciting. Obviously, that Baylor game is going to be the one that a lot of people are talking about, and I'm looking forward to being there.
It's not a very appealing home schedule this year. I mean, these are the games, and you like we said, well, you start with Lipscomb, then you play Troy, Pacific, Little Rock, and Maryland Eastern Shore. All of those games are in November. Then you turn around in December, you play North Carolina A&T at home, and in Oakland at home. Those are the only games in Fayetteville in December. Then all the other games are SEC games, and it's not like Arkansas got a great SEC home schedule. There might be some of these teams that jump up and they're better than you think they are, you know, like maybe Ole Miss under Chris Beard. But they play Alabama. That's the headliner. They played Texas. Anytime Texas comes to Fayetteville in any sport, that's a big game. But you look at the rest of their SEC schedule. They go to Kentucky. Well, that's the game everybody wanted to see. That's going to be at Rupp this year. They go to Tennessee. They go to Auburn. This is one of those years. They play KU at home, or at least, you know, that's the plan based on what we've been told. No date has been announced for it, and the game hasn't been, you know, officially announced. Calipari has said that it's being discussed. Kansas is a game that doesn't count, and that's probably the best game on the schedule.
Yeah.
At least for home.
Yeah, no, I mean, that Alabama team, like I think I've mentioned on air and then also, you know, just in passing, if I had an AP vote, that'd be my top, you know, that would be my preseason number one, just because of the roster they've put together. And obviously with Mark Sears coming back, the guy from their Final Four team last season, I mean, there's a lot to like, you know, and it happened in Tuscaloosa. But other than that, you are kind of right. Just kind of not the most exciting, you know, non-conference schedule, mm-hmm. especially when you just look at it on paper. I mean, Little Rock will be fun, obviously, because of, you know, Darryl Walker coming back to Fayetteville and everything along those lines. And that's going to be a really good mid-major team as well, I think, especially for the Ohio Valley. I mean, that roster that they have is really good. I mean, you look at K.K. Robinson and Milani Wilkinson and Jonathan Lawson and all those guys. Not to get too far sidetracked. Then you also have the Oakland story as well, you know, with Oakland beating Calipari in his last game of Kentucky and everything along those lines. But, yeah, it is not the most exciting home non-conference schedule. But, obviously, that kind of is... kind of goes hand. I don't want to say hand in hand. It balances, I guess, with the excitement of, you know, bringing in a Hall of Fame coach.
Arkansas also plays UCA in North Little Rock. That's not part of the home schedule, but it kind of is. But the best games, they're these non-conference or road trips. They go to Miami as part of the ACC-SEC Challenge. I mentioned they're going to play Baylor in Dallas. They'll play Illinois and Kansas City on Thanksgiving. They'll play Michigan and New York as part of the Jimmy V Classic in early December. Anthony, I want to talk to you real quick, too, about Arkansas soccer. They're ranked number 6. They're unbeaten. They just had a really impressive win over the weekend against BYU. They are the highest-scoring team in the country through, what are we, about 4 or 5 weeks now through the college soccer season. This looks like another SEC contender for Colby Hale, who's won 4 of the last 5 SEC league titles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this team, they're good. I mean, just to put it simply, I mean, they're good. They're fun to watch. They move the ball well. Obviously, they score goals. I mean, this is the highest scoring team in the country. It'll be interesting to see how that translates into SEC play. The SEC is obviously one of the stronger conferences in the country. I believe had the 3rd most teams in the last top 25 behind the Big Ten and the ACC. So it'll be a lot of fun to see how this high-flying attacking play kind of translates into the SEC. But, I mean, it's not just their attack either. I mean, their defense has looked really good. I mean, they've conceded against Division I teams only 4 goals across their non-conference schedule, and that was against – 2 of those were against Michigan State, who I believe was ranked number 5 in the last poll, and against BYU, who obviously – I mean, BYU did have some key graduations from last year, but it's still BYU. It's still a program that, has been to 2 of the last 3 Final Fours. So, I mean, they're good. They're exciting to watch. Good defense. Obviously, the attack is what – gets all the headlines and everything, but their defense is, just as good.
Next up for Arkansas soccer, they play LSU next Thursday. I mean, does this feel like a team that's going to run roughshod over the SEC? I mean, if they're unbeaten going into their SEC schedule and they have played the way they do in the SEC, I would think, and the schedule is going to come into this some, because they did not play a real hard non-conference schedule. Like you mentioned, they played BYU, they played Michigan State. Those are good teams. It just feels to me like if they have the type of SEC season that we are accustomed to them having, you might look up on Selection Day and see them as maybe a 2 seed, maybe a 1 if things break correctly.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be tough. Obviously, the SEC, like I mentioned, is one of the top soccer conferences in the country, women's soccer conferences. They don't sponsor men's. But it'll be fun to see. I mean, obviously, there's a lot. The SEC is really deep. I mean, the LSU is a really good team. I believe last I looked, they were 3-4-1, or 3 or 4-1, not 3-4-1.
Mm-hmm.
just want to make sure I don't give people the wrong idea. But I mean, that's a team that
they got one loss.
Yes,
that's what you're trying to say.
Yes, just want to make sure that I'm not leading anybody astray, but. I mean, it's a deep conference. I mean, you look at top to bottom, Arkansas there at the top, all the way down to the bottom. I mean, there are teams that are really good. I mean, Missouri hasn't been all that great, but they still have a lot of threats like Kylie Simmons, who's looked at as one of the top players in the country coming into the season. So, I mean, there's a lot to like. I mean, Oklahoma wasn't expected to be all that great of a team this season, and they just beat the team favored to win the Missouri Valley. I believe it was 8-0. So, I mean, the SEC is, it's deep, it's good, it's talented. So there's a lot to like, and it'll be exciting.
You can read all Anthony's work at wholehogsports.com. He's our basketball reporter. He's our resident soccer expert. And, I think I covered it all.
Right?
Anthony, we appreciate you being here. When we come back, Alex Mortensen, the offensive coordinator for UAB, will join us to talk about this weekend's game and his return to Fayetteville, where he began his college career as a Razorback. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, or if you're looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and find them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined on the phone now by Alex Mortensen. He is the offensive coordinator at Alabama Birmingham. The Blazers will be in Fayetteville for a 3:15 game on Saturday against the Razorbacks. Alex began his college career at Arkansas, was a quarterback here in 2004 and 2005, went to Samford for a couple of years, and then came back and spent one more year in Arkansas's program under Bobby Petrino. And we're excited to have him today to talk about this game this weekend, his return back. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Hey, so you began your college career here in Fayetteville. You ended your college career in Fayetteville. You had a little pit stop in Samford in between. I wonder, what does it mean for you coming back this weekend?
It means a lot. I mean, and it's not the first time. I coached at Alabama for 9 years, and so I had an opportunity to go back a handful of times, and it was always really meaningful. You know, I love Fayetteville. I love Northwest Arkansas. I love Arkansas State. And, you know, my parents made Northwest Arkansas their home, so it's always been fun to go back and still have a lot of friends there. I have to say the first time I went back, maybe the first couple times, being on the other sideline was a little bit weird, you know, initially, but once you get in the flow of the game, it's just, you know, becomes a game. But yeah, I always enjoy going back there.
When you're in Alabama, you're in a number of, you know, different support staff roles. Does it feel any different this time coming back, being the coordinator for the opponent?
You know, maybe a little different. You know, I'd still say, like, you know, in those other roles, like, you're still, like, heavily involved. You're doing a lot of, you know, you're involved in a lot of capacities, you know, in terms of helping the team get ready and, you know, the plan, the preparation, all that. So you're still, you know, you're just as invested, you know, in both ways. But yeah, I suppose, you know, going back as a coordinator and in some ways, maybe it should feel different. But, you know, I have to say, I think at this point, maybe it'll be different when we get there, but it actually doesn't, you know, feel that different yet.
You grew up in Atlanta. What brought you to Arkansas in the first place?
Well, that's a great question. There were a lot of things. You know, it's funny. Yeah, I grew up in Atlanta, just south of Atlanta. And, you know, as I got older, I really did, you know, fall in love a little bit with, you know, I really enjoyed SEC football, you know, was an SEC football fan. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. My parents, you know, didn't go to, you know, just because we were in Georgia, my mom's from Alabama, my dad's from LA. So, you know, they weren't like diehard fans of, you know, a program in the South, but was just a really big SEC fan. And so when the recruiting process kind of, you know, kicked up for me, and it really, you know, it really picked up right after my junior years when it got heavy. You know, there were a few SEC schools that were recruiting me, and, you know, then Arkansas kind of came in the picture. And, you know, back then, you know, Houston Nutt was the head coach. Roy Whitkey, I think, was going into his second year as the quarterback coach. And, you know, I'd heard a lot of really good things about Coach Nutt. Mike Markison was our area recruiter in Atlanta. I got to know Coach Markison and liked him. But then I really developed a really good relationship with Coach Whitkey. And Coach Whitkey had done my research, had been at Eastern Illinois, where he'd helped, you know, recruit and develop Tony Romo, who at that time was not yet a household name. So I was really impressed with the work he did with Romo. And then Coach Nutt had kind of this background with Clint Sterner, you know, like if you went back where they did throw the ball and threw it well. So, because if you go back to that time, Matt Jones was the starting quarterback, and man, Matt was such a special athlete. And I was self-aware enough to know, like, I'm not Matt Jones. And so for me, there was a little bit of a vision of, hey, this offense could look a little bit more like it did with Houston and Clint, with Whitkey and Romo, you know, going forward in the future. And so there was a little bit of acting on faith from a scheme and offense standpoint. And then in terms of the program was in great shape. I was my junior year, you know, they'd won the SEC West and played in Atlanta, you know, for the SEC championship. There were a ton of NFL players on that Arkansas team. So you felt like, man, you got a lot of good players, really good players on the line of scrimmage, first round draft picks at different spots. And then if this offense kind of maybe tilts a little bit towards more what would fit my skill set, it felt like a really good fit. And it was in the SEC. Now, I'll be honest with you, growing up in Georgia, I didn't know much about Arkansas other than Bill Clinton was from there and they won the 94 national championship with Nolan Richards. And that was like kind of what I really knew. And so so my junior year, I kind of did a dive. Our whole family did on the state, the area, the school, and really grew to fall in love with it. And so at that time, there were some other SEC schools recruiting me and offered me. Coach Saban actually did at LSU, him and Jimbo Fisher, you know, I went and worked out for them there. And Auburn, you know, was at that time, you know, I think they just made Hugh Nall their offensive coordinator. He was the line coach, but Steve Ensminger was coaching the quarterbacks. I really liked Coach Nall. You know, they were going to take, and I really like Coach Ensminger, but they were going to take two quarterbacks in their class. LSU had just signed Jamarcus Russell and Matt Flynn in the class prior to me at LSU. You know, so there was, you know, as you just started to weigh things out, you know, just Arkansas just felt right, you know, and not to get overly spiritual, but it's one of those things like put to prayer a lot. And it just felt like the right thing to do in the right place to be. And I'm so glad I went there. And, you know, and just even, you know, the relationships I have today, I have so many friends, you know, that I still talk to all the time, weekly, that have come out of going to Arkansas.
I was looking at the years you were here, and I started thinking about the other quarterbacks that you were here with. And Alex, I don't know that anybody else could say that they played with four different quarterbacks who were multi-year starters. You played with Matt Jones, you played with Casey Dick, Ryan Mallett, and Tyler Wilson.
Yeah. No, there were some really good players there. And, you know, I got there with Matt, and Matt was like such a phenomenal athlete. And he was really a great teammate too, like really, you know, for a new guy, like treated me well and really enjoyed being around Matt. And, you know, it was also like, you're going, man, the things he does, like, I can't even, you know, begin to imagine doing some of these things athletically. He was not the guy to model your game after, but it was a lot of fun to watch him and be around him. And, you know, and I actually tore my labrum my redshirt freshman year, and it was torn in two places, and it went undiagnosed. And we had a great training staff there. You know, I loved our training staff, but I probably didn't complain enough. And I thought, you know, maybe it's just, you know, product of throwing a lot my whole life. Just so, you know, tried to rehab it, but never got the MRI till really my senior year when it's really too late. And so kind of bad, you know, I saw my throwing motion change. So I tried to battle through that, you know, through my time there, but that part was frustrating. And I wish I would have maybe pushed, you know, and gotten an MRI sooner, but yeah, I got to play with some great quarterbacks there. You know, Casey Dick came in, did a really good job there. And Casey, of course, has got a really good coaching career going himself now. And then, you know, there was Ryan Mallett, who, you know, unfortunately we lost Ryan, but, you know, Ryan was another guy that, was a great teammate. I got to know Ryan when I went to camp at Arkansas. You know, he was like going to camp there since he was really young. He'd come up from Texarkana. So I felt like I'd known him forever. And, you know, I think, you know, Ryan, was so talented and, you know, maybe different ways than Matt Jones was, but kind of both of them were kind of on this freakish, you know, had some freakish abilities just on maybe different ends of the spectrum. Matt was a good thrower, but it was more with his athletic ability than Ryan had really had a truly like a freak arm. And I think Ryan, you know, didn't always get enough credit for how sharp and how quick minded he was. You know, I think Ryan would have even told you like there were some things like maturity, this, that, the other, that he was growing, you know, when he was young. But the one thing you could see in him right away, man, he was a quick thinker. I thought he picked, like Coach Petrino had a very involved offense. He picked the run checks up. He picked the protection redirections up. And, you know, and then of course had an opportunity to play with Tyler, who was, you know, a talented thrower of the football. He was tough. And Tyler also, I thought, was a very instinctive player too. You know, and that there were flashes of that like right away. So yeah, I got to be around some really, really good ones there. Good players and teammates.
So as I mentioned, you know, you left Arkansas and then you came back and you spent a year with Bobby Petrino. You'll see him Saturday. I wonder, what did you learn from him and what makes his offense so difficult to prepare for?
Man, I learned a lot from Coach Petrino, you know, and I had a good experience playing for Coach Nutt and Roy Whitkey and all the guys that, you know, David Lee, you know, learned a lot from that crew. But I think anytime you get a new experience, you learn new things. And Coach Petrino's obviously got an incredible track record as an offensive coach and developer of quarterbacks. And, you know, when I think about some of the things I learned or, you know, continued growth with him, you know, I felt like, one, I learned a lot about the other side of the ball. You know, the offense, you know, required you to redirect protections. It required you to have, you know, some run checks that were very specific as to fronts, coverages, pressures. You know, so I learned more about blitzes, coverages, how the front and coverage tied together in some areas. So learned more about the run game. So, you know, those were some things that I really learned. And then I think, too, he had some methodology with how to read a defense, how to read zone coverages that was maybe different. And it's not a knock on the part. I learned, hey, the other ways I learned were good, but there were some really, really interesting ways to look at the pass game, you know, that some of it, you know, I would say I still carry today into coaching. And, you know, and I think too, like the other part where he did a really good job is I think a lot of people would point to, you know, maybe his mind or the way the offense is designed or the design of the plays or the check system. But I think he did a really good job of coaching the how, not just the what. And, you know, I think he put a big emphasis on fundamentals on, you know, at all positions. I think there's, you know, an old saying, the key to getting your quarterback to play well is to get the 10 guys around him to play well. I think he and staff, you know, held the rest of the offense to a really high standard to do their job, you know, at a high level. So there were a lot of things and, you know, and that, so yeah, certainly learned a lot there. And then, you know, I was, you know, blessed enough to get to Alabama where, you know, man, you know, that was a whole nother, you know, explosion of growth and learning for me.
And you spent a lot of time at Alabama. You haven't done just a whole lot of job hopping. When you got to the chance to go to UAB, because I would assume you probably had some other opportunities to go elsewhere before that, what made it the right choice for you to go work with Trent Dilfer?
Yeah, you know, there were things, and some of the things maybe on paper wouldn't make sense to not go do them. But this thing at UAB, you know, one, a lot of confidence in Coach Dilfer as a leader, as a person, as a football coach. I really think highly of him. And that's confirmed as I've had an opportunity to be in a building with him. But we'd gotten to know each other through really the recruiting process. I'd recruited some of his players at Lipscomb Academy. And, you know, he was, you know, getting back into coaching. He'd been doing the Elite 11. So He studied us on offense at Alabama. So, we, you know, that dialogue kind of got going, you know, for a couple of years. And so I have a lot of respect for him. And then, you know, the next part is UAB itself. You know, I think, you know, we've moved into a new conference. We're in the AAC. You know, we're like all programs learning how to navigate the portal. So there's, you know, things we're still growing through, figuring out. But I do believe this program has a high ceiling. I think it's located well. Coach Saban used to always talk about your five-hour radius in recruiting. I think we've got an excellent five-hour radius at UAB in terms of there's a lot of good players inside 5 hours of Birmingham. And I think it's an attractive program because of that, but also because it's a great place to live. You know, being from Georgia, coaching at Alabama for as long as I did, I've gotten to know this area, and I think you can recruit to this place. And then finally, it's, you know, it is for me, you know, it makes sense because it's kind of close to family. You know, my mom's from Alabama, my parents are living in Northwest Arkansas. Unfortunately, I lost my dad in March. But it just made sense to be close to my family. And I'll say this, like there was a couple things that popped up a year ago that would have required moving and all that. And one, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave here. I love working here. And then secondly, though, you know, just everything that happened with my father, I can't imagine being somewhere else. You know, we were able to be together as a family as everything was happening, mm-hmm. or everything did happen. So, that, you know, there's a lot of things that have drawn me here. And, you know, and again, not to overly spiritualize things, but, you know, this is a decision I put to prayer and in terms of coming here or maybe not going somewhere else. And this really felt right. It felt like, you know, hey, I should be here.
I was talking to someone about your dad. You brought him up. I was not going to bring him up, but obviously he's well known here to people, not only the Razorbacks, but nationwide. They were saying that his favorite two teams were the Razorback baseball team and whoever Alex Mortensen was coaching.
I think that's accurate. He loved Arkansas baseball. He did. I mean, he loved going to those games, and he covered baseball a long time, mm-hmm. loved the game of baseball. He coached all my teams when I was a kid, and he was a really good baseball coach. And, you know, we won a lot of games, and man, he was such a good coach. He really knew the game. So he loved baseball, and he had a lot of fun going to those games, watching. He was really into it and had, you know, a good set of friends he hung out with at the game. So yeah, that's legitimate, man. He absolutely had a blast doing that.
Well, your dad was great to me, and I know you hear this from people all the time, but just what a wonderful legacy he left. Hey, I want to ask you a little bit about your team. You're 1-1 coming in here. You beat Alcorn State in the first game, lost 32-6 the other night down at ULM. How do you feel about your offense, and kind of what are the keys that you're talking about this week?
Well, you know, one, I mean, like any team, I mean, we've got a lot to get better at right now. And I would say, you know, you look at our last game, you know, which we did not play well in. We played very poorly. You know, there's an old saying that, you know, and it's stating the obvious, but, you know, and I'm probably misquoting him a little bit, but Belichick, I believe Coach Belichick used to say it a lot, but it's like, before you win, you have to keep from losing. In other words, you can't, before you win a game, you can't give the game away. And, you know, I give the team we played a lot of credit. I think they played well. They're very well coached. Their players played well. I think they had a good plan. They did a good job, but I don't believe we made them beat us. We beat ourselves. And, you know, we had two fumbles. We had a guy slip and end up with a safety. You know, we had a punt blocked in the game. We threw an interception. So it's like we did everything we could. And we had penalties, and particularly penalties in critical areas. And so, you know, those are things that, you know, I think we've got to handle the stress of competition better, because not all those things necessarily always show up in practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got to, you know, so I think that's the first thing, is play cleaner football. And I do like our team. I like our players. You know, we had a good offense last year. We had a top 20 offense last year, and we had a lot of guys back from that offense. You know, now there's some new players too that have got to step up. But I do like our group, and I think we can get better and improve. But that's, you know, that's kind of the first step, I think, is to play, you know, cleaner football.
I want to ask you real quick before we let you go. Arkansas's defense had a pretty nice afternoon the other day, held Ollie Gordon in check over at Oklahoma State. As you prepare for Travis Williams' defense, what are you looking at?
Well, you know, I think, you know, you're always looking at the personnel, you're looking at the scheme, you know, every week, and, you know, they're really good in both areas. I mean, they're, you know, they've got really good players. I think they play hard. I think they're, you know, they've got good, you know, defensive team speed. And they're, you know, it's evident they're well coached. I think they line up well, they adjust well, and then they play well post snap. So, you know, I think they're good at all three levels. Like, you can't say, hey, there's one thing to go pick on, or there's one weakness. So I think they're doing a really good job there. They look like a really well coached team.
Alex, we appreciate your time. You've been great with your time.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
All right, and good luck coming up here to Northwest Arkansas this weekend. And we appreciate you being with us today on our podcast. We'll be back with another one tomorrow. We'll talk with UAB radio play-by-play voice David Crane. We'll also have a conversation with Tom Jacobs from the College Baseball Hall of Fame about Jeff King's induction into the College Baseball Hall of Fame. Until then, hope you'll visit us at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everyone.